It's March 21, and the crew of the Macross Speaker Podcast has just come back from episode 2 of Macross Delta. Welcome to another episode, everyone. Yak de Culture. Especially to my right, Yak de Culture, Mike.
Oh, Yak de Culture, Glenn.
Thanks for flying all the way over from the US just for episode 2.
Just for episode 2. I did it just for that and a hangout with you, of course.
For 22 minutes of animation.
That's right.
Well done.
And $50.
For the ticket. Yes. Well done, well done. And of course, to my left, we have
Egan.
And Adrian, also known as Save, but I don't yak to culture, I'm Maki Maki.
You don't rig Ult-chan?
Yeah.
But you could Ray-Ray, because they call Rain a Ray-Ray. Anyways, yes, we've just come back from episode 2 of Delta, as I mentioned, and this is going to be a spoiler-filled cast. We're going to start off with some news, which isn't spoilerific. After that, there'll be a warning, and it's all spoilers from there. So be warned. But first, let's get into the news. We have an official broadcast date, finally. April 3rd will be when Macross Delta begins to air. In the Tokyo area, it will be airing on Sundays at 10:30 p.m., which is quite an early time slot, especially compared to Macross Frontier, which aired at 1:25 in the morning.
I just sworn it was later than that. I thought it was sometime around after 2.
I remember it changed from week to week, depending if some special ran long, so they had to push back all the late night stuff.
Yeah. Could also be a difference in where we lived.
Yeah, either way, it was also broadcast during the weekday.
Oh, okay. So, fair enough. And of course, it's not going to be at 10:30 in the evening all over Japan. That's just for us lucky residents of Tokyo. Depending on whereabouts you are, it could also be at 1:05 in the morning, 2 in the morning, 1:30 in the morning. So we're quite lucky in this area. We're going to get it at a decent time. And right at the end of the week and beginning of the new week. So we'll start off Monday with the new episode fresh in our heads every week.
Which is good because, you know, that's when people are home from work and stuff, right?
Right. Right, Mike. Look, people do not work in Tokyo on Sundays, despite what anyone may have you think, Mike.
Oh, really? Because I read somewhere. Oh, they must have been mistaken.
Yeah, that was... Try reading quality stuff.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Maybe warn me next time.
So, in other news, Love Halation the War, the second single, has come out on iTunes and digital musical services. The first physical single for Macross Delta has been announced. It will release on May 11. It has 3 songs and also the karaoke versions of all those 3 songs. It has the opening, the ending, and Ikenai Borderline. It does not have Love Halation the War or Juritic Beginner, which is the other song from episode 1. So the opening and ending, which we'll be getting into a little bit later. the opening for Macross Delta, which has never been heard yet, it hasn't been shown to the public. Small spoiler, it wasn't in episode 2 that we saw today, is If I Only Love Once. And then the end song, which we did hear today, was called When My Rune Shines, or When My Rune Sparkles. So we'll have the opening, the ending, and Ikenai Borderline on this single that comes out in May. And speaking of Ikenai Borderline, the singer of... Not only Ikenai Borderline, but of all members of Valkyrie have finally been announced. Now, with one exception, all 4 of the 5 members of Valkyrie are the voice actresses singing the roles. So they're doing the songs and the voice acting, with one exception, which is Mikumo, who is a bit of a Cheryl or a Milan, in that she has a different voice actress and singer. The voice actress, as has previously been announced, is Ami Koshimizu, whereas the singer is Junna, and this was just announced today. And Junna, despite how amazing her voice sounds in that song, is actually only 15.
They make actually a point of it during the on the website. She was only 14 when she recorded the Ikenai Borderline that everyone has heard of so far.
Which is amazing.
In middle school, no less. Yeah.
I mean, Maine had a very mature and distinctive voice from a young age, but you really felt her mature in the lead-up and during Frontier, whereas Junna seems to already be there. Yeah.
Like you were saying, it reminded you of Hikaru Utada?
Yeah, of Hikaru Utada back when she was first hit back, what, 2000 or the late 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah, very similar vibe. In other news, there's a radio show, a Macross Delta radio show coming. It's going to begin on April 2nd, so one day before the broadcast. It will be broadcast at 3:30 a.m. on Sundays. So good luck to anyone who wants to sit up and listen to it. It will feature, although it's going to be available, I believe, digitally, or online in some form afterwards.
On Macross JP, yeah.
So this show is going to be a 30-minute show each week, and we'll have the voice actors and actresses for Hayate, for Freya, and for Makina.
Oh, my favorite.
We've also got a little bit more in the way of details on the upcoming manga. And so these manga, we have, first of all, Macross Delta, the songstress who guides the galaxy. It's a rough translation. Which is going to be about Freya. Then there's one about the Knights of the Kingdom of the Wind, which is the Black-Winged White Knights. We also have the regular Macross Delta comicalization of the series, and Macross E,
which stands for
Macross Extra, which is going to be a side story by the looks of it. I haven't looked at the description yet, but it features some character designs which were recently shown at the Macross Museum. So, oh, and of course there's the novelization coming out. So there's a lot of stuff coming out. But look, let's get into the meat of things. We aren't sitting in some skeezy bar near the cinema this time around. We decided to come home and get our thoughts in order. So let's get into Delta Episode 2. And I've got to say, getting tickets for this were a pain in the butt. Unlike episode 1, where the tickets were for fan club members, there was no fan club, special fan club tickets for this. The draw for tickets was open to the public. First time around, I didn't get any. No one I knew got any. They ended up adding a second screening, so they had a 3 o'clock screening, then a 6 o'clock screening. I had to make about 3 or 4 email addresses just to end up winning one pair of tickets. And then I didn't pay in time and lost them. Also, I thought. It turns out I did actually have them. So we ended up with enough tickets for pretty much everyone, except Renato. I'm sorry, Renato, but I'm looking forward to hearing your impressions when the episode airs. So the tickets were a pain to get, but we got them and we got in. And you guys, and when I say you guys, I mean Adrian and Mike, you saw it. Before me, you saw the 3 o'clock screening. Egan and I were at the 6 o'clock one, and the screening was a almost complete version of episode 1, an almost complete version of episode 2, and a talk show and a mini concert with 2 songs. Now, when I say an almost complete version of these 2 episodes, they are pretty much complete, except the opening is not yet there, so we do not know what the opening animation is going to be like. We have not heard the opening song. Both of them had a placeholder title card, basically, picture of Valkyrie. Episode 1, however, for all intents and purposes, appears to be more or less complete. And I'm going to just quickly go into what I noticed had been changed before getting to the big changes, which are at the end, where right. I want to get your guys' impressions. So the episode's been really tightened up. As I mentioned, there's been some footage added to the end. Originally, the episode was 22 minutes.
According to the staffer at the very end, yeah.
And about, what would you say, 3 minutes was added?
Yeah.
However, the total runtime of this new version is 21 minutes, which means it was edited by about 4 minutes. And these edits have been mostly just really tiny trims here and there, and even the director, was it Yasuda?
Yes.
Was saying that he just really trimmed carefully. For example, specific lines, Arado's line about banana sake has been cut. One line by Hayate after he gets fired about how he's been told he should, you know, do a good job since it's his last day. He doesn't say that now. They have him say that while he's piloting the mech. The destroyed looking mech at the docks, which is called, they actually said what it's called. It was a workeroid? Or something like that. There's some weird name for it.
I just remembered that the drone, it berated Hayate for a bit, right? But did it do that in this particular version?
I don't know. They did trim a lot of things down like that. Him moving cargo on the dock, they really cut it up so it was faster. And some of the shots seem more zoomed in to me. I that could just be me. But so there are a lot of small changes made. It seemed to flow a lot quicker. Like, the lead up to that first battle seemed to go a lot quicker to me. And then we got to the end battle, and it didn't end where episode one normally ended. There was an extension. It didn't end with Freya running into the battle. So, guys, if I want to hand it over to you for a sec. Would you like to give us a basic explanation of what happens in that last battle at the end?
So, we come to the last 3 minutes?
Yeah. Because I met you when I was coming into the cinema. You were coming out, and you were like, there's 3 minutes in the end. They're the best thing about it.
I don't mean it's the 3 minutes are beats the second episode, but just it wasn't what I was expecting. But if you really thought about it, it's exactly what you should expect would happen.
Okay.
In a way. And I think some people are going to probably kind of say, oh, they're going back to the well again. So I think there's going to be a lot of criticism on one part of the scene. But just that whole scene, because in the preview edition, it's Freya jumping, and then it
ends.
Yeah. Basically, there's like a stop frame midair, and the color. Yeah, and they cue the music, and then they roll the credits. Well, when she jumps up, it pans over to Hayate, and like something gets shot next to him. So he's still like in the line of fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Freya goes running to join the singing, he happens to glance over and see a 171 just kind of battle damaged and sitting off to the side. And he basically jumps inside and pilots it.
And he says, wow, good thing this works just the same as my loading mech.
Yeah. And he jumps in there because he sees that Freya's running in through all the danger and she's going to be in trouble. And I think it was like a battle pod comes up that's going to blast her.
It was a Glouge, wasn't it? I think.
That's right. The scene is it's going to stomp her with one foot.
Right.
And he gets over there, but he doesn't have a gun pod. I don't remember him having a gun pod, but he's kind of a little bit of dancing and a little bit of like some Jackie Chan, Jet Li kind of moves going on.
So I'm thinking Eddie Goro right about now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of Brazilian.
A little bit. He did that
fighting
like
style.
Did that couple like two-step, three-step thing, dodging bullets, and then he jumps over the Glog and basically, you know, swipe kicks it. And from there, rescues Freya, flies up into the air. And you're just kind of thinking, this is just like the Frontier homage of the first episode, but just stranger. Yeah. And okay, now he's he grabbed her. He's flying up in the air. Okay, this is like the first episode and the second episode of Frontier. And so you're thinking, okay, what's going to happen?
And you know what happens? Nakedness!
Yeah. it jumps all the way to the last episode of Frontier, in a way. But it's seems that Hayate finally finds his calling.
Being naked.
Yeah, being colorfully naked. and flying in the middle of a battle. Surprisingly, no one's shooting at him until after he's had this epiphany. And also Freya's all
naked,
butt naked,
right,
and colored in weird colors.
So I think the best explanation would be the scene in Frontier where, you know, Cheryl Alto finally understands what Cheryl's talking about, and you see him kind of just fly back. First of all, the cockpit disappears, he's flying back, and then his outfit just bursts off him and he's just like, whoa! And that is normally the kind of thing that happens in a last battle.
Yeah.
For Macross at least. And that just happens here. He said earlier in the episode he never came across anything he wanted to do, and now he's saving Freya wasn't enough. She's singing while he's holding her in the Valk, in the hand of the Valk. And with her singing, her rune going off, and him feeling the wind in his hair, so to speak, he's like, oh my, this is amazing. And I don't know, that is instantly represented by him being naked. Yeah. And apparently, Freya's enjoying it too, because suddenly she's naked. So, it's first episode, and already we have enough comic cat material for the next 2 years.
Yeah. And after that scene, they get shot down. And both the plane with Freya and Hayate start falling towards the ground. So I'm thinking, oh, they're going to do the whole Freya's going to fall in the hand and they're going to have to rescue her. But instead, it's Mirage.
Yeah.
She comes and basically rescues both of them.
And so Mirage actually does something helpful for once.
And I kind of draw a blank after that. I think that was it.
So, well, of course, they get shot down. And episode one finishes with them heading towards the ground.
That's right. Yeah.
So they're falling, smoke coming out the back. They're plunging towards the ground. Which, you know, the moral of the story, do not pilot Valkyries naked.
You're carrying a girl in your arm.
That seems to happen a lot. You never jump in a cannon fodder. That's the golden rule.
This is true. So, Mike, what do you think of the additional footage? Because you'd seen the DeCulture edition a few times.
Right, yeah. So... just to add to a little more of what Adrian was saying, when Hayate was battling the Glaug, the impression I got, because they kept doing these cool like fast cuts from where they showed his like hands and his feet, how he was piloting the Valk, and then showing like how the Valk was reacting. But I got, like I told Adrian, like it looked like it was DDR. He was like doing like DDR type moves and then like making the Valk like fight. So I thought that was pretty cool.
And nearly all the fighting seemed to be using his legs. Yeah. It's capoeira kind of.
Yeah.
Combining DDR with Isamu Dyson's scene from Macross Plus, because there was a lot of that same kind of sequences in there.
But I think, and then just to kind of expound upon what everybody's talking about. Because, I mean, it could seem like vague, but the impression I got was that once Hayate was in the Valkyrie and he grabbed Freya in the hands of the Valk, like once he heard the music, from what I gathered, you know, my limited Japanese, but it was just, he's like, what's this feeling? And I thought, the impression I got was that it was Freya's... whatever fold power that her rune has or that she has is what triggered that. And they went into like, it was like the zone. So
flying to win or.
Yeah. So, you know, just so everybody out there, it's very, ephemeral. It's not literal. So they didn't literally like take off their clothes and get naked. It's like a dream sequence, basically.
I was thinking Japanese, anime fans, aren't over here in Japan aren't going to be too fazed by it, because they've seen similar things in Tomino, just Gundam, when they go in a new sequence. They all go full, you know, a buck naked, and you know, brain power throws out the naked girls and boys in the opening sequences.
It does, yeah.
So it's like, that's probably why Kawamori was like, yeah, I can get away with this.
Or did he even think he's getting away with anything? Because as you said, it's culturally not really an issue, and it seems to
watch Totoro, yeah.
It seems to be used fairly commonly as an expression of this is an emotional and a mental state. It's exactly. Not supposed to be, you know, actually happening. It's not literal.
Yeah. The one thing that was interesting is when that, even from the start to the end of that, I don't know if I'd say it was unique to Macross. Again, it's kind of like they went back to the well. But the way... the whole dancing thing and him piloting, it woke me up. I was actually kind of like, yeah, this is awesome. But at the same time, the other side of my brain's like, so many people are going to hate this.
It didn't wake me up. I had the same reaction. I was like...
And I was like going through, I was naming the people off in my head who would hate this scene.
Just forget the haters. Yeah. So, and that was the end of episode one. Right. Did you have any comments on episode one before we jump into two, Egan?
Couple of things. I was surprised in how things that they did, like Frontier callbacks to the original TV series. Ending the first episode with crash, going toward the ground, Also calling back to the first couple episodes of the Macross and first Macross TV series, you know, saving a girl with a bad droid in your hands, getting shot down. Yeah.
Right.
It was like a lot of that, just like Frontier.
It was very much like the beginning of Macross, but combined with, as you said, Adrian, the end of Frontier, just all mixed together in that one episode.
Yeah.
He came to the realization that Alto had after 25 episodes, by the end of the first episode.
But the only thing different is this is the first time for like the upcoming idol or singer is running into the battle.
Right.
That's never happened before.
Right. And interestingly enough, he had to save her. She was going to get shot.
Yeah.
So she was wrong in what she was doing. It wasn't Valkyria who saved her.
But I would say that her music helped shift the battle. So in a case, she was putting her life on the line, but she did it for a reason.
Right. Yeah.
Or do you think she was doing it deliberately, unconsciously, or just...
No. Well, she'd already said earlier in the episode that she'd bet her life on what she wants to do.
Yeah.
And she did have that really quick flashback right before when she made the decision.
Right.
And looks like she's holding the same glass case, the case for the glasses that the guy at Windermere has. Or some kind of... She's holding something, and it looked like the glass case that he shows.
I thought it kind of looked like a mobile phone. It's kind of a similar shape. Because you see a phone later on when she drops it. Or maybe when it gets knocked from her. We'll see, but yeah. Alright, so episode 2, shall we?
Yeah.
Alright, spoilers. More spoilers ahead. So, episode 2 opens with Hayate and Freya still plummeting towards the Earth in a shut-up, non-functioning 171. They get saved, as you said, Adrian, by Mirage, who actually does something useful for a change. She transforms the Batroid, saves them. She knew who was originally piloting it, and so when she tried to communicate, she realized there was someone who wasn't the pilot piloting it. Again, a throwback to Frontier, I guess.
Yeah, it was almost the same shot, too. They're zooming in from above and seeing him kind of fighting with the Glaug.
Oh, yeah, she looked down from above. Yeah, yeah. She did. So she saves him, gets him to the ground, and then while Kure pretty much finishes up the battle with the Var, because the Var syndrome had resurfaced halfway through the battle after the Knights of the Wind folding in kind of diverted everyone's attention. The Knights of the Wind apparently complete what they'd come to do. Their commander says, look, we've got all the information we needed. He takes a look at Valkyria. He's like, all right, we're good. We're done here. We've mission accomplished. Let's get out. The Knights of the Wind are very, very upset about this, but they fold out. They follow orders, which meant the only thing left to do was handle the Var syndrome, which Valkyria then took care of. Because, again, that's their job.
The regular thing that they do if it weren't for the Aerial Knights coming along. Yeah.
Right. So then we cut to a battle aftermath scene. Well, you finally get that scene from the very first teaser of Mirage grabbing Hayate by the collar. She is being as uptight as she is, very annoyed that he'd put what she thinks is putting civilian lives at risk. She's like, well, if you got shot down, what if your actions broke our formation?
Go ahead.
Well, and you know, if they broke the formation of Valkyrie, then the Var would not be defeated and more people would get hurt. And she pretty much slugged him one. However, he had a comeback.
He pointed out she was out of formation.
Which was pointed out in episode 1 where he said one of the Valkyries was lagging behind the others in formation. He's like, well, you know, you can't say I'm going to break the formation. You already were lagging in the formation. I saw you earlier. And she's really upset. And Arad basically, Captain? Because the captain's the captain of the ship, right? It's Johnson.
Team leader.
Team leader.
Yeah.
Arad, he's just like, all right, that's enough. What are you doing? So, but he also is obviously impressed by Hayate. So the battle's over. And Freya gets a bit of a fangirlasm in that. But the shuttle comes down to pick Valkyrie up and take them away, and everyone's cheering them, and they point out Freya, and it's like, yeah, we heard your song, we could feel the effect. And she's like, I'm going to go to your auditions, I'll get to Ragnar somehow, because she's on the wrong planet. And they're like, all right, we're waiting for you, you know, come and audition. And they take off, and she fangirls out. And somehow she does... I mean, they show the same freighter landing on Ragnar. So did she stow away again? It's like she doesn't have any money. She doesn't have a personal invite. And yet she and Hayate apparently board the same freighter.
How did he?
They never really made that too, clear. So. Yeah, and he went with, and Hayate went with her.
Yeah.
He's jobless.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's been fired.
But he did have his last paycheck, so...
Right.
Maybe. He paid for both of them.
I guess that's, you know... And he said, you know, he's tagging along with her just to see her fail the auditions.
Yeah, asshole.
Oh, so he's just like Alto.
Yeah.
So they land on Ragnar. And this planet is, well, from what we first saw of Chuck's apparel, of his fashion, right. It's pretty much what I expected. But you want to explain what the planet's kind of like, Mike, visually?
Yeah, so we were talking about this. Basically, they say... and from the romanization of the planet from the first episode, it's the planet Ragna, right. Even though in Japanese they're saying Ragna, which some of the people that have watched the sub versions, some of the fan sub groups subtitled the planet Laguna, right. Which kind of makes sense because the people of that planet, they're like mer people or Atlanteans or something like that.
They have gills.
They have gills and fins.
Webbed hands.
And, yeah, and so, but it's the planet Ragna, so I guess Ragnans or the indigenous people of Ragna.
Indigenous sushi of Ragna.
Yeah.
And you spoke of Finns, and the planet seems to really be kind of like a bit of a tourist trap in some respects. You've got all the local kids trying to con people for money, and people are selling, like, artificial webs that tourists can put between their fingers, and they're like, you can swim like us as well. Yeah, except you don't have gills, so you're going to drown.
Exactly. Let's not forget the cat seals.
Oh, that was
continuing a grand Macross tradition of combining animals. Tell us about the cat seals, Adrian.
They're cute, and they were just sea lions with cat heads on them.
Coming soon to your anime store.
Yeah.
So, and this is the problem, because in Hayate's profile, it's pointed out that he's allergic to cats. So I'm presuming that means cat seals as well. So, and they swim around in the water, and then they just jump up on the dock and just hang out with people and then jump back into the water. They're weird.
Yeah.
So from there, they head into the audition hall for the Valkyrie tryouts. And Freya hasn't done the previous stage of tryouts and applications, so initially they reject her.
Right. And he's ready to laugh at her right there. He's like, oh, you didn't even get that far.
Yep.
Yeah, I caught that.
And, of course, you know, Valkyrie and Arad are watching behind the scenes, and they're like, no, you know, she was on the battlefield, you know, let her through to the proper audition stage. And also, Arad's like, well, I want to talk to this Hayate guy as well, so tell him to come and see me. So they both get summoned. Freya goes into the auditions, which is a room full of hopeful-looking girls. And then who scares the living crap out of these girls, Mike?
Ah, yes. Captain Ernesto Johnson.
He's a big man. The last time I saw a dude that big try to get through a doorway was in Kill the Kill. In episode 1, they actually show this guy. Like, it was almost parody.
Yes.
The man is huge. He scares the crap out of everyone.
The tallest Mike Clone Centrati we've seen so far, right?
Right. Is he kind of like the reverse Clan? Like, when Clan's micronized, she becomes extra small. When he's micronized, he stays fairly big, I guess. It's a genetic thing.
Well, I'm curious if he's actually... if you ever see his Zentradi form, if he's a giant Zentradi,
right,
like bigger than your average Zentradi, or if it's just a, you know, like how Clan was, just like an error in the
DNA quirk, or whether he's like the Mike Hagar of Zentradi.
He could be.
So, and these tryouts happen, and they basically the auditions are pretty quick. They have all the girls sing, and they're looking at the fold wave reactions, and Freya is in the top four. She's in.
It's like a quick scene, but there's so many shots of the stages that it seemed longer than it was, and it really felt like watching Love Live.
Mm.
You know, just because they're all younger girls,
like kind of more cute girls like Freya, and they're all in their jumpsuits doing this, and you know, they weren't wearing the regular like idol clothes. They're actually wearing all the stuff that you would see idols wearing during all the auditions and stuff.
Right.
And they're showing all these different characters and all these other girls. And I was surprised the amount of detail they put in all the competitors.
Mm-hmm.
So it had like this Love Live moment for a good 5 or 6 minutes.
Hmm. Was it that long? Yeah. I didn't think it was that long, but...
I was thinking, it's like, where did they get all these people to sing... do the small audition bit part? I was like... Oh, all the ones who lost to Suzuki were probably the ones.
Oh, they might have used it. That's a good point. That is a very good point.
Something I noticed, too, that you pointed out. So the Walkure members are watching the girls audition from, like, a monitor room.
Mm-hmm.
And when they sing, they're testing their voices for fold waves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something, like, really noticeable. But when the back... to the first episode, when they show the silhouettes and then the Walkure logo comes on the screen, mm-hmm. in the middle there's like this yellow glowing sun.
Right.
That is the same like glowing sun that was on the monitors that was detecting the fold waves.
It's a good catch.
And then Freya,
the fold pattern.
Yeah, the fold pattern. And it's Freya's fold pattern is the one that's the most circular and full.
Off the chart
kind of. Right, yeah. And that's the one that they use for the Walkure thing. I just noticed that.
Interesting. It would be the obvious choice when they do pick her.
Right.
No, interesting yeah. catch. Well, yeah. And the thing is, she's among the top four, but she's not scoring anywhere near as high as she was registering during the battle. So obviously she's nervous and whatnot. While this is going on, we cut away to Hayate, who, halfway to Arad's office, looks out on deck and sees a 31A, a gray 31A, and I almost stood up. And I was like, yes, a 31A, for 2 seconds, and then it's gone.
It does fly later on. You see in the background, you see a distant one, the 31, that's not the cranked arrow with the Schwarzweb mm-hmm. winglet. So, yeah, off in the distance.
It's like, oh, one more thing. Finally, 31A, and then it was really brief. Mm-hmm. And he sees that and he's like, well, that's interesting. So he goes out onto the deck. Now, when I say out onto the deck, because he's been called to Arad's office, he's actually gone into the Macross Elysium, which is somehow standing there in Storm Attacker mode. And that's, I don't know how it's standing in gravity like that. But he goes up and the arms are outstretched so that the decks are extended. So Valkyries can come in and take off, come in. And so, yeah, he just wanders out onto the deck and he starts checking out planes. And people are like, who the hell's this guy? And he's checking out Mirage's plane and just hanging out there. At which point, I think we cut somewhere around this point. We go back to Freya, who is apparently just told, all right, just go home. I don't know whether they said outright that she failed.
They said, I don't know if they said her score.
Right.
But they were like, they said her name, and they were like, you last place, or basically like, yeah, it's just, you didn't pass.
So they put her on the cable car home, which I'm presuming, I guess they've got a temporary audition center somewhere on the Elysium.
Yeah.
And because it's up this huge hill, they've got like a cable car. Because they show this huge hill even in the first teaser.
Yeah, that's
up.
Like a ropeway.
A ropeway, yeah. That works. And they put her on there, and while she's partway down on this ropeway, there's a VAR syndrome outbreak. One of the dudes in this car, like they show on the TV, on the monitors, footage of the city being messed up. And this guy gets affected by VAR, and he's obviously about to attack her, and he slaps her down. And everyone's like freaking out. And at this point, at first, I'm like, oh, this is obviously a setup. Like, this is a test.
And I caught that right away.
Right. But then,
you can tell one of the girls is Mikimo with the wig on.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, then the girl in front of her gets like completely slashed Wolverine style or Sabretooth style by the guy with VAR syndrome. And they show in slow motion all this blood. And I was like, well, she's obviously been hurt, so maybe this isn't a setup. But then Freya starts singing. It's affecting the guy, but one of the random passengers in the back, you know, random in quotation marks, has a gauge out. It's like, wow, her reactions are really high.
I noticed
and
that.
I'm like, wait, why is
that? No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, even that just made me know, like, yeah, it's...
Yeah, that was a shame, because I was like, wow, what if this was legit? And she did actually save someone, and that overrode her results in the actual audition. I thought that would be really cool, but
of course, because she was going to... Well, it looked like she was going to fail either way because she didn't just start singing. She rolled up in like a fetal position with a guy hanging over her, but like looked like he was going to slash at her or whatever he does. And then she starts singing.
Right.
Yeah, she has a flashback. That's right. So she gets curled up in the fetal position and she has a flashback to Mikomo fighting in the first episode and how she was able to cure the Zentradi's Var syndrome. So that's what gave her the impetus to say, oh, I should sing to save my life, basically. And then that's when she starts singing after that flashback.
Which she sings...
Ikena Borderline? No.
So it's Love, Halation,
Love, the War. Halation, the War. Yeah, yeah.
So there's a Freya version of that song, as we'll get to. Or you guys will get to.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it turns out, of course, it is all set up, and I was just like, they did an AKB 0048 down to the letter, because in, like, the first couple of episodes of AKB 0048, there's a scene where they actually put the idols into a battle, and they are actually fighting, and a bunch of them are getting shot and killed, and it's like, wow, this is actual idol auditions, they are in combat, they are getting massacred, this is amazing, and then it's all, like, fake. And they're all just being stunned or paintballed or something. And this was an almost identical setup, just with one person. So that happened. And then at the same time, Arad has found Hayate on the deck, on one of the arms of the Elysium. And he's like, look, I want you to, why don't you fly for us? He's like, you know, it's obviously you're looking for something to do. You seem to have, you know, some kind of innate skill. You know, you handle yourself well under pressure. Why don't you join us? And this is where we finally get that scene of Hayate standing on the edge of something with his arms out. As he goes and stands on the very edge of the deck, waits till he can feel a gust of air coming, kind of semi-leans back, kind of jumps back a little bit off the deck on tippy toes so that the wind pushes him back onto the deck, which is a fool thing to do, and he's straight out of Eureka 7.
I would say straight out of your mushy pedal, but that's me.
What's your mushy pedal, Adrian? We could do a your mushy pedal episode, actually. Yeah, we could do that sometime. All right, put it down on the list, the to-do list. And he decides, all right, yep, flying's pretty cool. So if I join you, you know, I'm not good with orders and stuff, so you better let me do what I want. You better let me do what I want. And Arad's like, yeah, sure. And Messer, who's there, is like, wait, what the hell? And that's when everyone's favorite little Miss Grumpy Pants, Mirage, comes on and realizes that Hayate is there saying, yeah, I'll join you, while touching her Valk.
No, that's right.
And she's like, get the hell away from my Valkyrie. And that's where it ends. I think that's pretty much a blow-by-blow description. Now, there are a lot of tidbits in there, but is there anything in particular that stood out to everyone that they've... Oh, yeah, that we may have...
The latest in wearable technology is now we're seeing.
That was something that got brought in, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I guess Macross is a way of, even from the very first series, of taking whatever technology we had and kind of extrapolating it, sometimes not quite... as far as future will have it, but like Frontier was the squeezable phones after, you know, iPhones got popular.
Right.
iWatches are now popular, so what do they have now?
Well, you know, it's funny because between the preview episode and this, there was a news story about an actual plane using 3D printed drones that could launch from the back of it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, we just got one step closer to the Delta. It's I wonder, was Kawamori keeping a track on like developments of something like that, or is this just reality imitating art? I don't know
he was familiar. Like everyone have seen and heard of the SR-71. There was a previous program based on the same airframe which had a drone on top of it, which for people who are fans of G.I. Joe back then, there was a toy they made which had a drone on top of it. And he knows about these kind of things. And that was the first thing I thought when I saw the Draken with the, or for that matter, any of the ghosts when you put them on a Valkyrie, or the Draken with its drones. You know, he was borrowing a page from real life history.
Hmm. Interesting. I must say, the only real thing that irked me, I guess, is that we had another example of the holograph clothing change. But it was in a way that I don't think can be really explained away, because the minute Freya passes what was the final stage of her audition, which was this staged ropeway attack.
That's what I was going
to say. They were like, well, everyone reveals themselves. Yeah, sorry, we're all here in our holographic costumes, so you didn't know who we were. But you're the newest member now. You've just passed your final test. Congratulations. Oh, and here's your costume. Bam. And she gets the holographic transformation to her new outfit. And I was just like, wait, you haven't rigged her with any holographic suit or anything, unless she's standing. She was standing on the screen. I was like, well, maybe it's projecting from that. But then she kind of just collapsed on the ground, half off the screen, and the costume stayed on her.
Well, if you go back to the Rainbow Bear concert, people in the audience, they're what they were wearing was being changed instantly.
That's a good call.
So
it's a very good
call. That was already a technology that was already played in the movie.
I didn't even think of that.
No.
Well, nice pickup.
So there's a natural extension from Do You Remember Love and then continue on to Frontier. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I know you were going to mention that, Mike. Sorry, was there anything else that you...
Oh, no, well, that's basically... We kind of had glossed over the end of Freya's audition, and that was just that, because it was something that Adrian had brought up before when we were talking right after, is that this episode 2... I mean, for the people out there, the grumpy people who, who are like, oh, this is nothing but idols. Take solace in the fact that this episode could have been stretched out to 2 or 3 episodes. Like, you know, normally it's like, okay, there's the audition or the getting ready, then there's the actual audition, and then there's like the concert, and then passing. You know,
yeah.
They could have stretched all that out, but the fact that they didn't, and it's like, okay, we got all that out of the way. Frey is in Walkure now. And that was just like...
Hired as a pilot.
Yeah.
So both of them, all that was decided in one episode.
Even in comparison to the first Macross TV series, we saw Miss Macross, you know, her getting the singing and then going to the first concert and stuff like that. You know, a couple of episodes plus, you know, getting stuck in the ship. Mm-hmm. And of course, Hikaru at the same time becoming a pilot. That took a couple of episodes. Yeah, we're seeing this second episode. He's already a pilot. She's already a singer. We're good to go.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I see where you're coming from, Mike. I do agree. It's a very speedy way of getting through all these, hitting these keynotes that need to be hit, but getting it done in a speedy manner. However, I'd add to that that, you know, the first, 20% of the episode is finishing up the battle from the first episode.
Yeah.
So it flows quite well there, I thought. And then you have them getting to Ragna, you know, getting into the audition, and then bang, 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 getting the audition done, getting Hayate being accepted as a pilot done. I thought there was a lot of good world building there in between, because you're seeing how things were on Ragna. You got to see people, you got to see, you know, who was surprised even at Captain Johnson being such a big Zentradi, what people were wearing. There was just, it was a good sense of a planet, a different type of planet, and yeah, you know, this is, so far we've seen, you know, we've seen what? Arshahalu,
mm-hmm.
We've seen Ragna, and there's been, well, the inside of a building, wherever the Knights of the Kingdom of the Wind are from.
And thanks to the trailer before, we have a sense of what their castle-like exterior looks like.
So that, already that's like 3 planets, and we're only 2 episodes in, potentially.
I'm pretty sure, well, according to that galaxy map, the other planet is Windermere. That's what they say, at least on the map, whether that's going to be the official name or not, but
well, there's
Windermere and then Ragna.
But do we know that's where the Knights are positioned?
Right.
I mean, yeah. The Knights of the Wind, Windermere, I guess, yeah, that would be the logical
well,
progression.
And isn't the their leader, isn't his name Keith Arrow Windermere?
Yeah.
So
I guess the connection should be there.
Going along with the whole name pounding, we're talking about Lagna, Ragna. Like, it could be wordplay on both Laguna as well as Ragna, as in Ragnarok. Valkyries, Norse mythology, that kind of thing.
So, yeah, I guess my take on it then, Mike, would be I think it connected the dots well. It introduced us to like the power structure. It introduced character rivalries already. And it is clear now that the rivalry between... How do I even put this? So the whole thing between Hayate and Mirage is going to be friction about who's the better pilot,
right,
at first at least. So that's a very kind of different dynamic for part of the love triangle, which is pretty interesting, I thought. And we got a 2-second teaser, 2-3-second teaser for the next episode, which showed Hayate in a Valkyrie, in a full pilot suit, with a helmet on, spinning out of control, so it's probably him learning to pilot properly.
I just thought of something about the love triangle. In one, some ways, it parallels the first Macross series. You've got the newbie Valkyrie pilot, a military superior to him, and the idol singer. So, yeah. And
there are also a few new characters I saw in the background. There's this big, almost T-Hawk from Street Fighter-looking guy in the background.
Oh, with the Windermere group?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not one of those one-to-one cutouts. He's not the pretty boy type.
Right.
I noticed him, too. He had his hair braided. Pulled
back. I think he had some tattoos on his face or something.
Yeah.
I was like, that dude... Like,
he has a line, too. I think he said something.
I can see there's going to be a fight between him and Captain Johnson. This has got to happen. That's going to be epic. Which is actually a scene we neglected to mention, in that it did show back with the Knights of the Wind after they'd retreated from battle. And they're all really not happy about it.
One thing that you'll... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, which was more of that footage that was in the original teaser trailer.
Yeah. One thing for the people who catch this on broadcast that... Actually, it was so quick. A lot of people didn't see it in the theater. When they shift over to the headquarters of the Aerial Knights, before we see the Aerial Knights, we see the hangar. And what would be in the hangar? They're fighters in Gerwok mode. The first time we see that fighter in any mode besides fighter.
But it's very small, kind of in the distance. And you were saying we didn't notice if they had their arms out or not.
Yeah. Exactly.
Whether it was just the legs.
Yeah. It might have been just legs, like you were saying.
Handbrake park mode.
Yeah, I have to look at it again. But going back a couple months during the production, didn't Tengen make a comment on Facebook about he finished the design and then said something about it being a hangar?
Yeah.
Enemy's hangar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be it.
The only one we've seen so far. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Good call.
Because, yeah, it when you first see it, it does not look like anything that you and Spacey would have done.
Right.
It looks very hard to describe. I don't know. It belongs in a video game, fantasy video game.
It reminded me of something you'd watch in those old H.G. Wells movies. Like arced and almost honeycombed together in a way.
Mm. Oh, like a 1930s special effects film, black and white Metropolis or something.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, I just remember when that came up. And then I think at the time we were saying, oh, that's one hint. We know that the enemy it'll be Valkyrie on Valkyrie.
Because they've got hangers.
Yeah. That was the only thing we took away from that.
And they showed also briefly when Valkyrie came back to Ragnar, they showed them putting their Valkyries away. So some were on deck and some weren't. And yeah, as I said, there was a 31A on deck, which was great. But one thing that wasn't really clear to me was how, and I might get this on second viewing, how they got from Alushaharu back to Ragnar. I was like, did all the Valkyries just fold over there? Or because a transport came to pick up the girls. And during the battle, there was an op center where people were giving orders from. So I was thinking, you know, were they on a ship that then warped over, or did they fly straight through a fold and then went back to the
Legion? There was a shot of a looked like a Macross class ship in cruiser mode.
Right.
And I doesn't say whether that was their ship or not, but that one was in, because they showed that one. And it was like a really weird, like, it looked more like the Battle 7, but with all these, the front ends were kind of like...
It almost looked like two aircraft carriers right next to each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm guessing it's one of the Macross class ships in the fighter cruiser mode in orbit, where on the planet you had the Elysium in attacker mode.
And the Elysium, I don't know if you guys think the same thing. Egan mentioned to me, he's like, well, looking at how the details on that ship up close, and it was really well detailed. The curvature, it looked a little more Miyatake-ish than...
Like we said at the previous podcast, it had texture. Something that Miyatake's designs have.
So it'll be interesting to find out. I quickly skimmed the credits as well as I could during the ending.
Fortunately, none of it was in an alien language this time.
Yeah, true. But I couldn't pick out Miyatake's name. So I'm sure that with enough time I can find it if it's in there. But then again, there was a new song. There was the new animation to the end song. Mm-hmm. I was kind of distracted, but I didn't come across Miyatake's name.
Oh, the Kill Annie ending?
Tell us about this ending sequence, Adrian.
I don't know. I mean, it's not your typical Macross ending. It's more of the Kill Annie girls, main character, school, running around town, where it's the almost Bakemonogatari kind of style-ish as well. It's actual, like, the backgrounds are actual places in Japan, like storefronts, classrooms. So obviously nothing that is on either of those planets, but in everyday life, Japan. And then Freya is very stylized, either running around or some interacting within the scene. And there's real people around her, I think.
All right.
That's ending sequence threw me off for a bit, because like you said, it looked like it was some other schoolgirl anime. But then I was thinking, it reminds me of a lot of the first Macross series. Because what was the ending for the first Macross series?
Yeah, it was just Minmay.
Minmay against a background of real-life photos taken by the Studio Way Artland folks of places around Japan. So they're doing, I think, like a subtle homage, where it's ending sequence that looks like a lot of other anime series now, but it's actually like the first Macross TV's ending done in a modern style.
And also reminded me a little bit of, I think, was it the second Frontier ending, where you saw, like, Ranka still shots of her, like, cooking, and she was, like, trying to make a cake or something.
Oh, yeah, but those are all still shots.
Yeah, that's true. But this, like, the art style kind of reminded me of it, that kind of almost pencil, kind of more abstract-y kind of...
Now that I think about it, even Macross Dynamite 7 with Milane and, sorry, Basara...
Parade.
Yeah, him against real-life photographs. So I guess it's their way of, you know, homaging the first television series. And even the song, because that was the first time we heard the ending sequence, the ending song.
That's what I wanted to ask. What did you guys think of that end song?
I like it better than Love, Halation, the War.
I think I know why, but why do you think?
Well, it's got rhythm.
Ouch!
It's just a catchier song and just seems... if I had to be forced to listen to it over and over again while waiting for the screening to start, I'd rather hear that one.
Speaking from experience.
What were you forced to listen to, Adrian?
Love, Halation, the War. It's not that I don't like that song. It's, if they would have looped it like two other songs and You Can Have Borderline or something else and came back around, just after a while I got tired of it.
This is going to be important for our sanity, because of where we live, anywhere we go within walking distance, if Macross gets popular, we're going to hear it again and again, all these songs.
Well, even today, well, even these days, when Christmas rolls around, the Frontier Christmas album is still played at many, many, many shops in Akihabara.
Yeah, but you still hear, like, Frontier songs, like, anywhere. I mean, I was, like, in Shinjuku one time and I heard it.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I think, Egan, you mentioned to me that the song had an almost late 80s through the mid-90s. It felt like, you can imagine it being used in an older anime.
If you pulled out a CD from my collection and said, this is a song you hadn't heard on it yet, and played that song from the 80s, or, like, you know, from some anime back then, I would not have questioned it.
That would be a 7-inch single, not a CD.
Yes. That's true, yeah. And it was like, ooh, what? It had, like, the rhythms, it had the tunes of something from the 80s. Yeah. Not that it was synthesized or anything, it was just, yeah.
No, I think it was just a well-put-together song for an ending.
Like, that's the thing as well. It felt like an ending song, not like an in-universe song, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
And that is, and just to be clear, that the song is Sparkle Like My Rune, or Watch My... What is it called, Gwen?
I wrote it down.
Pika.
Actually, I've got it. I've got it right here. Where are we?
Well, if you think about it, Runner's not the most Macrossy song either.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, when my shortened translation, when my rune sparkles,
which is weird because the melody thing, the rhythm does not sound like an in-story song, but the lyrics are about a specifically Macross Delta keyword.
And it really has some corny lyrics.
Explain what rune is.
Well, that's one thing all this made clear, was that rune is referring to the thing that's in Freya's hair. Do you, anyone want to explain anything else?
It's not just... everybody's kind of noticed that it's... Obviously, Freya is a Windermere. The people of Windermere all have that. Right. And with my limited Japanese understanding, they all either enhance, like, fold waves or they emit fold waves. I wasn't clear.
That bit was a little bit... I want to rewatch it because they had a scale and they were talking about how she projects more.
They were talking about readings, Hana, of reactions. So right. We don't know, like you were saying, if it causes it or it's the effect of it. So.
Right, or the amplifies or what exactly it does. But apparently if you stare at someone's rune for too long, that's naughty. So don't stare at any young lady's runes when you're out and about, gents.
Even when they're shining sparkly. Yes.
Exactly. But yeah, it was a good song. I thought it was good.
For me, Ike and I, Borderline is still, maybe because we've heard it so much, maybe because of the ska opening, but I still like it the most of all the songs.
So far, that's probably still the top one, even though the ending song was good.
So far, the worst song is the one they haven't brought out as a single yet, the Julitic Beginner, which is the one from when he's piloting.
Oh.
On the docks, that's the... Kind of
which we know is a Valkyrie song.
That's like the Banana Moon song for Delta, even though that was a borrowed song from 2.
But yeah, all these songs are released either when they're on iTunes or this upcoming single in May. They're all accredited to Valkyrie, which is interesting because this ending song doesn't sound like a Valkyrie song. It sounds like a well-put-together ending, but it's still credited as a Valkyrie song. Also, if you think about it, we haven't heard the opening yet, but including the opening, you've got the opening, we've got this when my rune sparkles as the ending, you've got Ikenai Borderline, we've got Love, Halation, the War, and we've got Juritic Beginner. That's 5 songs within 2 episodes. They are really throwing a lot of stuff
Has
in here.
Any other Macross series given you that many in the first 2 episodes? No. Like, definitely not the first series, no.
Not 7, that's for sure.
There's only just one song.
But I mean, Frontier had one Cheryl song. We had Itezu Gogoku.
That bled into another song.
So plus the opening and ending. I don't know, maybe Frontier. I have to go back and check. Mm. But either way, it seems like they're throwing a lot at us. Interestingly enough, getting off the topic of music, still no real... transformation for the Draken, as you said, we saw what might be a parking mode,
yes.
But they are keeping as much of that under wraps. They're still a big reveal. Don't expect to see anything until they decide to. And looking at the story, they could well go a few more episodes without having another confrontation with the Knights of the Wind. They don't. Mm. It's whenever they decide to fold back in, because they're unknown. It's not like...
And they're not the only threat, because of the Vowel Syndrome, and who knows what else is going on.
Exactly. So that will be interesting. But all right, before we get to what happened after the episode, any final thoughts on the episode 1 and 2?
Well, just for me, I enjoyed it. I thought it wasn't what I was expecting, but I like how it was pretty much you could actually run 1 and 2 as a 1 hour special. Because they really do fit really well together.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed it for that. And I like the world building that we were discussing earlier. And it looks like from the very small preview of episode 3 that we got that I think that we might... Well, we're going to see some mecha action. But that could be a good chance for us to see the dragons come back.
Mm.
If he's like training out in space or something. And they decide to attack while he's training. I don't know.
So you're telling me if they put episode 3 on cinema, you'll jump on the plane and come back?
I'll come back, yes.
I just thought of something. It's like, we know they attacked. Do we know their objective yet? And because now our main characters are on a different planet, will they follow the main characters to that new planet? If so, we get a better sense of what their objective are.
Well, since they appeared where the Var syndrome had an outbreak, I get the feeling that we may have an episode of training or some other character building, and when there's a next major outbreak, they'll probably appear again. That I think the Var will be the main connecting thread. Having said that, when the Var outbreak happened, that song was different.
It was. the song that whoever is that which, Lady which, M? We don't know.
Which is another song, by the way, technically. It wasn't as soft. Like, it was almost, I think it felt like the same song, but maybe further on.
Yeah, it's like, that's the one thing I noticed. The beginning of the song was different from the Mission 0.89,
mm-hmm.
but it was still the same feeling. It was still discordant.
Right.
You know, so there was a...
Well, it felt a little less discordant. It felt more like there was a singer there somewhere.
Yeah, at the beginning, but then as it came, when the VAR, like what triggered the VAR is when it got really discordant and the... You had these, for anybody that knows music, you had a lot of weird minor keys and some stuff that was like in the Phrygian scale, which is like really, really dissonant and weird. Mm-hmm. So that gives, you know, it's noticeable to your ear,
mm-hmm.
which I'm like, hey, this is probably why it triggers VAR syndrome, because it sounds like shit.
You saying emulators don't sing well?
What? No.
Is that a Macross 2 jab?
But that's the other thing. We still don't know who Lady M is either.
Oh, I'm not expecting that to be revealed for a while.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to move on briefly to what happened after the screening. Briefly, because it was a heck of a long talk show. We were in there for over an hour.
Yeah.
Not a lot of any meaningful content was actually revealed. Who did we have there? We had Kawamori.
We had the director.
Yasuda, the director. We had the voice actor and actresses for Hayate, for Freya, for Mikomo,
and
for Mirage. Yeah. And they were all... I was just struck by how young the cast were. Not by, you know, Minori Suzuki as Freya, because, you know, she just turned 18... She's just literally graduated high school like a month ago.
Yes.
So she's young, although not as young as Juna, who's 15, which is kind of mind-blowing. But just the rest of them, even, you know, the voice actress for Mikomo, who's slightly older, like, they're all just joking around constantly.
Yeah.
When they came out on stage, because I know the second screening, some of the people we know went back in a second time.
Okay.
But when the voice actress for... Mikomo stepped on stage, she was the last one to go up. There was like a gasp that she was actually on stage, because
she's a known voice actress.
Yeah, well, because I mean, one of her biggest roles is playing Haru from Spice and Wolf. But literally, like, they name people off and they walk up and name her off. Like, there was like and I was like, okay, gotta watch Spice and Wolf. Like, yes.
And they were being asked by the MC, and the MC was someone I've never seen MC this before. He was this really tall dude. He was 189 centimeters. He's ridiculously tall, and apparently he's currently 80% through the process of being bit role cast as a Zentradi in the show. He's been talking to Kawamori about it. But I know who he was. He was joking as much as anyone else. And he was just asking, basically, you know, he asked all the voice actors and actresses, you know, how did you get chosen? What were your first feelings when you were chosen? You know, what do you think of Macross? And, you know, say a line which defines your character. And they're all giggling and laughing so much, they actually screwed up some of their line delivery. So Minori was, even though she's the youngest voice actress just there and the newest one, she was the most professional. She did everything brilliantly. The others were just screwing around far too much.
Well, and I think, again, that's because, I mean, very similar to the American voice acting community. You know, you have the people that are young bucks that are up there that are like, I'm a serious actor, you know, this is, you know, my job and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so it's her first time out, so she doesn't want to screw up. Whereas the other people, they've been in the community for a long time, so you've got all these veterans that they just get up on stage and they just mess around with each other.
They know, and they have nothing to lose, they're okay.
Well, the thing is, I wouldn't say the others were veterans yet, though, because even Hayate's voice actor, he's only like 22.
He's been in a lot of stuff, though, if you look up his credits.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
One thing I picked up from their talk was, how many different generations of Macross fans we're talking about? Because Koshimitsu was talking about catching seven.
She was the main outlier. She said she was seven generation. But
and then the others were talking about catching Frontier as high schoolers, which, like you were saying, for Uchida, the Hayate's voice, it wasn't that long ago. And of course, Suzuki.
She was in just barely elementary left. School. She So,
and of course, Kawamori was there talking, being the very first person, you know, right. creating. So you got this multi-generational folks on stage.
So it was interesting seeing the effect of Frontier, because again, Minoru Suzuki was talking about she was a Ranker fan. Yeah, she and when she first saw Megumi Nakajima, she said she aspired to be like her when she decided she wanted to sing and be a voice actress, and she succeeded in that. I will say that I think actually I'll get to that comment in a moment. Yeah, there wasn't much in the way of new information from Kawamori or Yasuda, really. It was just these voice actresses joking around, mostly.
Only thing I remember him is emphasizing, this is what I'm trying to do, is mixing plus and seven. Like he, right. The emphasis he's been making all this time about, don't expect something super serious, don't expect something super comedy and fun, something that's both.
Right. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, when he mentioned seven, he wasn't referring to the silliness. He said, wanted the musical aspect of seven and the mecha aspect of plus, which he hadn't narrowed it down that much previously.
Yes.
He may have in print, but he hadn't in talk shows. So after all this, we got a mini live from... We got two songs. And you guys got two different songs. Well, you... We had one song in common. We both got a different second song.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously Adrian and I went first to the 2:30 showing. And, again, our Japanese is limited. So the Q&A, a lot of it flew over our heads. But there was a really cool anecdote that I thought was pretty funny, which was the presenter had asked Suzuki-san what, you know, like what it was like, you know, as a first timer, basically working with like more
veteran
voice actors. And so she started naming off. She was like, oh yeah, so I walked in and then, you know, Koshimizu-san and Seto-san, you know, this and that. And she named off like her other fellow Walkure actresses, but she completely neglected Uchida-san, who's Hayate, who was sitting right next to her. So as she names off all these people, and like, oh, you know, they were all so receptive and warm to me, he kind of interrupts. He's like, hey, what about me? And then she's like, oh my God, I forgot. You know, you've been, you know, great and this and that. Because obviously they work a lot together. And where they were at during this time, it was the two of them in the middle, Hayate and Freya.
Right.
And, but Hayate was closer to the girls and Freya was closer to the director and Kawamori. Well, they kind of, during this whole time, she got up out of her seat and they switched. And so as he said, hey, you forgot about me. It was either Seto-san, who's Mirage, or Koshimizu-san, who's Mikumo. I can't remember who, but she said, she kind of got all the girls together. She said, oh, we're the new triangle now. And and so then Uchida-san walked away, and then he walked over towards Kawamori, and then Kawamori said, oh, yeah, so we're the new triangle now. It's like, and then he said, I believe Uchida-san said, oh, you know, Kantoku no Sankaku. You know, he's like, I'm in the director triangle now. And so I thought it was pretty funny. It was a cool little anecdote.
One thing I noticed, bleeding into that, like, because, you know, Uchida, such a ham on stage. He was basically...
Right. I thought he played up too much, but that's just me.
Yeah.
He was, if you've seen Mamoru Miyano, a couple other like leading actors, they play off this character on stage in persona of, kind of dominates the conversation and just plays on to other people's jokes. But when he cut to the part where he's talking about his character, I think he said something about what makes Hayate is that he lacks motivation. He doesn't have a will to do things. We don't know if that's going to change later, but compared to, say, some of the other Macross main lead characters, we're finding out whether he's going to find that purpose in life kind of thing. As, if not, the only thing he seems to do, wants to do is ride the wind.
So But after the Q&A, we got both our groups got the mini live. So Adrian and I, we got to hear the last song again, the spark
when my room
when sparkles. My room sparkles, yeah, and
then Love, Halation, the War.
Love, Halation, the War, right? Which is cool because it's not normally Freya that sings that, except in the first episode,
right?
But she's not the main singer, but.
So you got the Freya only version, which we don't know if there'll be a release of.
Right. So that was actually really cool. But getting back to that, I guess so. Love, Halation, the War. Did that come out yesterday or something? Or today?
Yeah, last night.
Yeah. So kind of what we had glossed over earlier. Well, Adrian and I, we got in there about by the time we got seated, it was like maybe 10 or 15 minutes until the actual program started. So I think we listened to Love, Halation, the War like 12 times. It just kept going over and over and over. And I actually told Adrian in the beginning, I was like, hey, you know what? As I rewatched the first episode, 0.89, I was like, that song actually kind of grew on me. So I actually liked it, or ended up liking it, where at first I was like, ah. But now I've heard it enough.
You've come full circle?
Yeah, not that I don't like it, but like it just got played out in one day.
Yeah, when you're sitting somewhere and you go, can I just play Imo? Like, yeah. You know, songs can play too much.
Exactly. Exactly. And so,
right.
And so when I heard, when my rune sparkles in the ending, I was like, oh, cause I was like, it's kind of weird old. But when she sang it, she got, the crowd to do like some responses and stuff and get into it. Clap.
No, also, when she was doing that.
Yeah.
Basically, it was like the whole, what's the Ronka song? They made the animation of all the dancing moves. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole Kira. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Basically, it's like she's kind of doing her own thing. And that's the one thing I did notice is that she was doing specific dance moves to that song. Mm-hmm. And then there's a part where she wants everyone to go,
Yeah, I noticed they purposely had that part in the song, so there was some kind of crowd.
I have to ask, if in their screening, even though it was a film screen, did people bar the light sticks?
Yes.
People had light sticks.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It wasn't just our screen, too.
And that song has a couple of really corny lyrics, like she's talking about rune beam and rune punch, and it's almost like she's got some Getter Robo or Mazinga stuff in there. It's like rune attack. And everyone's just laughing.
Yeah.
So, and you had Love, Halation. Well, how did that go down with her just doing that?
It was actually kind of cool because I was like, I remember thinking, I was like, I didn't think that she sang the song, but, you know, she performed it very well. I mean, that was my...
Well, I just thought it was another one of those things where Megumi sang voices, but it was from another show, just sing something.
Right.
And also, this is all in preparation for this week because there's Anime Japan, so.
Right, right.
I'm sure it'll happen again.
That's right. There's only so many songs we've heard to begin with, right? So we've. There's only two out of the three, four songs, so there's only so many.
Right. And how was the crowd reaction? I mean, were they up and. You said they had glow sticks.
Nobody got up, but.
But were they moving a bit?
Yeah. I mean, not a lot of people. I'd say probably maybe 30 people out of however many were in that theater had sticks.
Okay.
But everybody was clapping.
Everyone was clapping. There's the rhythm part where everyone's...
Yeah.
So we had When My Rune Sparkles, and we also had Ikenai Borderline. So I thought we were only getting one song.
Yeah.
And so we got the ending theme. Oh, yeah, that was cute. That was fun. All right. And then nothing happened. She left. And then this girl came on. I had no idea who she is. She's wearing black leather jacket, black, like, tight pants. But then it came up on the screen behind her. And it was the biggest screen in the complex because we're in screen 9.
Yeah, same as us.
And it came up with Ikenai Borderline and the name of the singer, and that hadn't been revealed yet, and the crowd just gasped.
Yeah, there was a visible, there was an audible gasp.
There was an audible of people like, oh, wait, what?
And then confusion, because we don't know this person.
We don't know who it is. And then afterwards, we looked in the pamphlet we got when we walked in, and it actually said in the It's got who Valkyrie are, but it doesn't say who Mikomu is, and it says this will be revealed on the website, like today,
at 8 PM, or at, around 8 PM, around which is 8 PM about the same time that the live happened in the second screening.
Right. So unless someone had been checking their phone during the screening, and even now I don't know if the time was synced up, no one knew who this was until she started singing, and then people were like, "Whoa!" But then what was interesting was she sang, she bowed, and then she left. And then the MC came back on and said, all right, we want everyone to come back on for a final, you know, a final word to the crowd. And she didn't come back on, but everyone else did. And he said, you realize she's not coming back, everyone. There's a reason for that. And we're like, what's going on? She's 15. And we had one girl, and I know who it was, visibly screamed at that. She was just like, ah! And the thing is, there are labor regulations in Japan. You cannot work for money at the age of 15 past a certain time of night. And they passed the time where she was legally allowed to work and get paid because she's still a minor. So they couldn't bring her back on stage to say anything, which gives you the question, what are they going to do for concerts?
Right.
Are they only going to be able to do for the next 3 years, or if it's by Japanese labor laws, it could be till she's 20. They can't have her come on and do concerts unless they're midday concerts. So I was actually talking to some fans afterwards, and
there's obviously a loop if you've ever heard of AKB48.
Maybe they don't pay
somewhere.
Them. I don't know. Maybe they don't pay them, or maybe they delay things. But they actually said they couldn't have her on. Maybe the song and the talk show are two different things because she's only getting paid as a singer.
Sounds like hogwash to me.
Well, I actually asked some people, and they're like, no, that's a completely legit excuse. So I don't know how that works. I'm going to look it up. But, you know, people are like, well, geez, maybe they'll just do a hologram version of it, like Sharon Apple or something.
Well, we did get a hologram version of Freya, so.
Yeah, we did at
Distant Memory Tamashii Nations.
Thank you, that one. I will say, though, as far as Freya is, as Minoru Suzuki is concerned, I think she's coming together well as a singer. She's obviously had a lot of training. They mentioned again during a talk show how difficult a lot of her lines in the show were for a new actress. I still think Haruka Chizuka had a better debut song and just generally has had a better songs and a better voice, to be honest. So with the Macross 30 songs. That could also be the composer, though. But I hope she gets some kind of insert song or something. I want to see more Haruka Chizuka. Because her career's boomed since Macross 30.
She's got a lot of things besides Macross. Might be why she's too busy for Macross Delta.
Unfortunately, that could be right. But all right, let's wrap this up. Any final thoughts? We now have this wait ahead of us because it's the 21st. The first episode is getting replayed on the 3rd, or getting played on air for the first time on the 3rd. And the big thing about that for us, I guess, will be seeing the opening, what that is. But other than that, then there's a week after that, around the 10th, we'll get the second episode, which we've seen before. So it's not going to be until around the 17th that we'll actually see the continuation. So almost a month from now.
I don't think you're going to get the opening until the 10th. I think that...
You think there'll be an opening on episode 1?
No, because the way the credits are, they're over the opening scene, and that didn't change in this episode either. Yeah.
That's what they call satellite voices, director. Yeah.
So interesting.
All that was all...
And it wouldn't be the first Macross series to do that. The first episode not having an opening, right?
Having said that, if it's only 21 minutes, that's still about a minute and a half short for broadcast.
Could be wrong. So
No. That's a fair point. That's very much a fair point. Interesting. Well, yeah, we may not see anything new for another 3 weeks.
We'll still be there at 10:30 PM, right in front of the TV to watch
My PlayStation 3 set to record. Yes. All right. So any...
It's hard to say. I can't remember... the Culture Edition didn't have an opening, but did the first episode have it?
Well, actually, I'll have to go back and check.
And there's also the first Macross TV series, which did a one-hour special, like you were saying they could have done with this series, the two episodes put together. So
I thought the regular version of episode 1 did have Triangular. I seem to remember it, but I watched that the Culture Edition so many damn times.
Time to bring it out again.
It's because of all those awesome homages to the original that everyone loved.
Yeah, in retrospect, the first Macross Frontier episode still fires up me more than some of the other first episodes.
Oh, it made some guy I know cry.
Wow.
Anyways, any final thoughts, Mike?
Thanks for having me sit in with you guys. It's I haven't been on the podcast for about 4 years. Well, I was on the guest podcast last week, but I hadn't been on the podcast for 4 years when I only made a cameo appearance of bringing a beer in the room.
Yeah, because you're the beer assistant.
Yeah, that's me. Yes. So thanks for having me, and I can't wait. I can't wait to see more. I am stoked. I want to see the. I do want to see what the opening's going to look like.
All right. So on that note, Mike, I'll take a sahi, and I'll let you go get that for me.
Coming right up. Got to go to the phone meeting.
And then after that, you're getting back on the plane.
That's it. I came. I watched Macross. I left.
All right. And so saying goodbye to Mike and goodbye to everyone listening. This has been a spoiler-filled episode of Macross Speaker Podcast. We'll see you again next episode, and I hope you're as hyped for Delta as we are. So until then, we're folding out. Welcome to Articuno World. What a cute world.